Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome. Welcome to another edition of the Soul Tree. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram. And as always, it is good having you in the house. Soul Tree Radio, proudly sponsored by BASNism.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good stuff, the who, what, when, where, and why, and how, right now, at www.BASNism, all one phrase.com. Please kick back and enjoy this rebroadcast and join us live every Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Show number 573. Well, we've had a few in between. I got to give credit to my man, Gary Norris Gray, for that. So on this show, per se, I believe we're at 573 and counting, because you can't keep a good mad scientist down. Welcome. As I know, some of you are enjoying the debate quotes on air. For whatever reason, we are here getting ready to do what we normally do, provide good food for thought, courtesy of myself and the chefs, another edition of Soul Radio. Good day, I was going to say that again, did you? I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb. Thank you for checking us out. And as always, Soul Tree Radio in a Raw, sponsored by the Black Athlete Sports Network, Roland Rogers, CEO of Loving Memory, our friends at Blog Talk, our friends and colleagues at 1450 WCLM AM, the Soul of Richmond, Virginia with Cowboy Reggie and crew, do sports talk every Saturday afternoon from 1145 AM to 1 PM. Our brother station WUFO 1080 AM, the Knicks in Buffalo, New York, the Pat Freeman, the mighty old Bob, does this thing 3:30 to 5 every Saturday with the number one sports show in the nation. Special tip of the hat to Brother Obar for meeting up with Colin Kaepernick and exchanging views on his ongoing efforts to wake folks the fuck up. And we applaud him. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of related stories from the Kaepernick thing that we will be talking about in earnest later on this evening, as well as Blog Talk colleague Anthony Johnson does a great job with his show, The Anthony Johnson Show, Sundays at 6 on Blog Talk, and our dynamic duo of SP Starbucks and Joey Savage with the Savage and Starbucks Show, Wednesday nights, 9 Central, 10 Eastern. So if you're not listening to us, you should be listening to them. So before any of the chefs show up and I have a couple minutes to do some damage, allow me, if you will, to elaborate on a couple of things that I found kind of intriguing. Now, y'all know, from the time we started this show, our issue has always been not so much defining profanities as to expanding on what a true profanity really is. And thanks to satellite radio and internet radio for being able to skirt the FCC and being able to say what really needs to be said in the manner it needs to be said. Because a lot of times folks get their asses twisted when someone says, oh, shit, fuck, you know, piss, cock, pussy, whatever the fuck. And they lose their damn minds as if, oh, how profane can you be? While they're ignoring the real profanities, the Republican candidate for the highest office in this land is a walking profanity. And in many ways, there are things that are profane about Hillary Clinton as well. But somebody pinpoints it and says, it's profane, straight up, you know, until something becomes so egregious that it can't be ignored anymore. As a surrogate to the issue, I will pass on the commentary, Mike, to Soul Tree Radio on Raw special correspondent Anthony Hamilton and the Hamilton.
Video you're about to see is in no form of fashion degrading any woman. We only repeat what Donald Trump said. We feel like this. Most of the
And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab him by the pussy.
But on both of Donald, he will grab you. He will grab you. You'll stop it. Grab you. He will grab you. Talking to you that they will grab you.
Now, I'm sure the ASPCA picked up on this and used it as a marketing tool. As a matter of fact, I know for sure they did. A shelter out on Long Island, New York, used a poster, kittens, emblazed all over it saying, grab that pussy, as a marketing tool for getting folks to open their homes and hearts to kitty cats. Now, the word by itself, we know, is a pejorative to some folks to a female body part or describing somebody who is wimpy in character, spirit, what have you. All that other shit. As I got my colleague, Gary Norris, great writing shotgun here. What's up, Jay? Oh, yes, we are back. And thank you, as always, for providing us with a safe haven aboard your depth
yes,
squad, Lord Vader.
Always.
Thank you, sir. Now, as always, we believe in getting the other side of things. So we don't just want anybody singing about grabbing the pussy, you know. So in interest of equal time, Soul Tree Radio correspondent Grace Jones chimes in on this issue.
Beautiful white sand beaches, right? Out of blue skies, crystal beautiful water, you stand in the middle of all of this looking breathtaking.
So, when are we gonna fuck?
What?
According to Jacqueline, you are really right in bed.
Jacqueline told you I was really good in bed.
Well, according to Jacqueline, you really know how to move your ass.
Oh, she told you I know how to move my ass in bed. Okay. I don't know what this Jasmine told you, but it's not that kind of party, and I appreciate that.
Hey, what's the matter with you? Stop that. Stop it. You stop it. Get out of here. America, love. We never believe this. You are going to turn that pussy. My face. Staring your smack in your face. No man can turn down this pussy. I don't know any man that can reach you.
Issue. again, America is a very puritanical country. We know this because that pedigree was impressed upon us from the time the sons of bitches came from over the water, killed the native people, and then put their hypocritical system in effect. Morals only matter if they do and you don't do as they say do. But I digress. Look, the bigger picture here, as I see it, is what we've talked about on this show from when we started. What's the more register in your mind as profanity? We just saw a vision of that earlier today while down in Georgia, where the polls are limited and they're trying to constrict the actual time that people can go to the polls. They have line after line after line, G. So I give the folks from Georgia a shout out. They are doing what they need to do because they knew it was like back in the day. So they're respecting the spirit of those people who lost their lives trying to secure the right to vote. Now, because there's millions of folks in line, though, G, you know there's a lot of elderly folks in line. Yeah. They don't give a fuck whether they're out there standing there 5-6 hours, whether they can handle it, you know, whether somebody would come out with cool water or something, anything, open more offices. They are deliberately restricting the process. So to me, G, that's the real profanity.
Also, what they do out in California is this. You have ballots that are 5 pages long.
Uh-huh.
5 pages long.
Yeah.
You have 26 amendments.
Uh-huh.
Right? See, people need to wake up because this nation is lazy.
Attention, I'm glad you mentioned that grocery tax because we weren't expecting to start off like that. But since they are on debate mode, we get to throw this shit in the pot. You know, not too long ago here in Pennsylvania, and specifically in Philadelphia proper, they passed a tax on soft drinks. So that if you bought, say, a Dr. Pepper, and the Dr. Pepper was 89 cents before, you know, just a regular 20-ounce bottle. But now, because of the taxes that they've imposed in Philly, that same 89 cents dollar box of pepper is now $1.69. So, and this is only in Philly. So if you want to cross the bridge to South Jersey, like you know you can go into any Acme or any other store and get the 32-ounce bottle or the big-ass bottle of Dr. Pepper, and it's going to cost you a lot less because that tax is not going to be levied there. So in an effort to try to rip people off, more and more people or businesses will lose money because a lot of folks just won't put up with that shit, and they'll go and spend the gas money to go over to Jersey, load up with a buy a whole lot of soda, and not even deal with it.
Okay, this is how crazy this is. Last year, it was so bad. The
Right.
This year, Berkeley.
Got California in the mix. Go ahead.
California, Oakland, California. This year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Now, what's happening is, if Berkeley passed their taxes, and Oakland did not pass their taxes,
right.
People are running to Oakland to get some. As you have people who are over a $5
Credit, he said, this is bullshit. This shit ain't fixed the fucking thing here.
And everybody's trying to pretend like it didn't happen because what are you getting? You're getting Donald Trump talking about grabbing the pussy. You know, you're getting Brad and Angelina breaking the fuck up. You know, you're not getting real news. And
thank you.
Without real news, without anything that would allow for an objective pro and con or point counterpoint, as they used to do back on the 60-minute game, is garbage. It's not just editorializing, it's straight propaganda. This is beyond positive. You want to stay stupid and closed out, you'll accept the path that they throw at you. But if you want to ask or at least think critical thoughts and hope that someone would provide a springboard where the right question would be asked that would allow for other pertinent questions to follow, that's not happening. And Flint is a classic case of that. The governor wrote himself a get-out-of-jail-free card. You know, if this had been a black governor who poisoned citizens in Grosse Pointe or Dearborn, Michigan, his black ass would have been under the motherfucking jail. You know, but yet nobody says that Flint is a profanity. We know what was done there with Paul Sand. We know those people will never recover from this because they weren't even supposed to know.
Yeah.
Gary, they weren't supposed to know, Gene. And that's what really bothers me because you got to wonder, who the fuck is next?
Well,
serious fire right now because the lands that are theirs,
by right are going to be snatched out from under them if people don't pay attention. And again, this to me is a profanity. Who gives a fuck if somebody says that they can't fucking stand the idea of this being done in America? That's the profanity. The government is trying, and unless there's a lot of backflack to this, will probably succeed in taking hundreds of thousands of acres of land designated for the Utes so they could snatch that shit and drill for oil and other natural resources and probably fuck up the land, fuck up the water with fracking and everything else that goes with it. Actually, they're going to do the same thing down in West Virginia, and I know people in West Virginia got to be a little nervous about that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The Ute Nation is going to be under siege here. They've already done this with another nation in Arizona where the water, I've seen the water, it's yellow. I mean, it's not like piss yellow. It's yellow like maize yellow. It's gold. Now, it's disgusting. And, of course, the Native brothers and sisters, they're doing their very best. We're behind them all the way. People understanding around the world, they've seen what's been going on. They know they have little political voice, and we should have long tag teamed with them to make sure that they understood that their concerns are our concerns, whether we live on or off the res or not. Ain't much difference between the res and the ghetto. Believe that shit. So here now, another profanity. You write on the dotted line and say, okay, Gary, these lands belong to you and the Lenape and the Hopi and the Sioux and everybody else. You know, y'all cool here. All right, we've agreed to this. No one's going to mess with your land ever again. So, of course, they find out that there might be oil underneath all this.
There you go.
Remember in Blazing Saddles when they were being funny about this, when we were talking about precedents for land snatching, and Harvey Korman goes, yeah, land, sea, snatch. This is exactly what this is. They just make shit up if they really have to. They don't care. They don't give a fuck. You know, what can they do? There's nobody to protest it. There's nobody to thump them up against the chest to say, any of that shit's not happening here. So this is a profanity to me.
Yeah.
And forget whether cuss words are being, it's the cuss words that are being created from the impact of this. Somebody says, okay, Gary, you're all right, you're all on your land. But then they'll say, okay, Gary, I know what we mentioned before about this is your land, but, you know, fuck you. We're taking the land. We're going to bogart this shit. And you just have to live with it. Now, is that not profanity?
Yes, sir. It goes deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lack of respect. America has the last 10 years. What I mean is this. You complain, the African Americans that we complain too much. Okay, but let's take that one step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting here and say that the Washington Football Club is a good name.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they say the same thing that the Washington, the Cleveland Indians is a good logo, we're the same name.
Mm-hmm.
See, and my thing is that I did it on my show down the
time. Mm-hmm.
If you can't do the small things, like changing the name of a team, or change the logo of my son,
true shit. To go where you just left, we mentioned a few weeks ago, before the NFL season really got into it, that one big issue that was going to hit everybody in the ass, the Washington Football Team, going to London in the International Series and playing it. The British government. Not a bunch of irate Native brothers or sisters or Native African brothers, African-American brothers and sisters, or just human beings who find it deplorable. The British government said the team's nickname is straight poison.
we don't condone it. You know, you can't come on our shores with this BS. Now, I'm sure Britain's got their own little in-house problems, but they at least made it up here that, you know, can't come in here with this. But yet the NFL is going to bogart their way in with their little bullshit band playing hail to these sons of bitches, you know, every time they score a touchdown. There's something wrong about that.
No, this is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's been things here that there's been around in D.C.
Yep.
This is what I mean, okay? They know this is wrong. And somebody knows that if you don't know anything is wrong, I'm going to break. The deep down know it's wrong. They do it anyway.
Yep.
That's what you call the man.
Yeah, exactly. And that is, again, it's not saying motherfucker or shit that is the profanity. It's what made you say motherfucker or shit that's the profanity. As I say this, we had two more chefs come on to the stage, the head of the Americas of the Black Athlete Sports Network, T-Mac Anthony McClain, and CEO of Marquee Magazine. Hey, man, Robert Quarles. RQ, T-Mac, what's going on, y'all?
How are y'all?
Now, as y'all know, Gary has been in that ad about the Washington Football Club for a long time. No, I'm serious. And you have to give credit where credit is due. Gary plugged along while everybody else had other things to do. You know, like he always does. Gary is the Pepe Le Pew of the BASN assassins and shit, because as the female cat is running away, Gary just goes, and he just stays on that shit.
You know, I swear I've never seen Gary in an ascot, but I'll go with it.
But this does bring up a point. Robert, as CEO of your own magazine, the Washington Football Club's going to London, and the British government already told them, we got a problem with your nickname. Y'all can't come over here with that shit. But yet, the National Football League thumbed their nose up at him and said, you know what? We got money to make. Forget this. We're coming over there anyway. How, as a CEO, do you see this as the front or the board or the front of the the front office reflecting this and you reflecting, reporting this? It's more than a class of coaches. It's really a class of disrespect, I would think.
Well, it's a little bit more than that. It's a class of value. I think
yes.
What happens in my space is that when we have these types of disagreements in terms of philosophy, then we've got to go back to the room and talk about how we're going to address it. And so you try to get in front of that. But because I guess the Major National Football League has so much money invested in these international events that they're going to step ahead. And they'll find a way to do it. But there also is what's called game insurance. You know, if the game doesn't go off, parties are insured.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Lloyd of London is involved with this, and they'll have some tedious discussions, but they'll have it ready to go.
Good point.
Now, they need to send it from the broadcaster, who may decide personally that they won't use the name. But I think that's emblematic of what it means to be American in this contentious political climate. I guess the world we watch.
No kidding. T-Mac, to that point, a lot of things that are done abroad as part of this international series don't affect Americans here, but they have clear impact abroad. Now, when Pierre Garçon steps on the field in Wembley, he will be wearing jersey number 88. Now, to a lot of folks in the States, that doesn't mean shit. But if you wore the 88 jersey in Germany and you're not white, you're asking for a fight. Because 88 or H, the eighth letter of the alphabet, 88 stands for a double H, which is Heil Hitler, because people won't say that anymore. Now, I know from playing ball over there, coaching over there, the NFL is aware of this. They are aware of the hooligans who Interpol comprised the file of as they would go to different sites and cause their mayhem because they knew back then if they were going to do business over in Europe, they'd have to be prepared for this. So I just think to the point that Robert just made, you would think that NFL would have told Daniel Snyder, you can't go abroad until you change that name. And obviously they didn't have that conversation, or Daniel said screw him because he's going abroad. So this is across-the-board arrogance on the part of the National Football League to even do this, knowing the conditions that they'll be running into.
Well, it speaks to what Rob said, and also it just speaks to the bullying nature of the NFL, mm-hmm. and also that American arrogance as well, because the other thing is, hey, it's just a football game. You should just be glad that we're here to, to have you for the game. But again, I think, people are just tired of the NFL BS now because they've taken that bully role to a whole other level. Not to mention, the greedy bastard principle that we always talk about in anything regarding the NFL, because these international games mean big money for the NFL, for the team, and of course, for England as well. But at what expense? More than anything else, because again, it does speak to that whole ugly American the whole vibe that this game brings up, and just the whole nature as well, because it's becoming the norm now with so many of these leagues now. Maybe League Baseball may be starting the season in England next year. Mm-hmm. We've already seen the NBA, grab the China market, and I know the NHL doesn't do as many foreign games as they used to. They're more I think with them, and that could change, of course, they seem to fascinate that market. They seem to push these outdoor winter classics a little bit more, and they've been successful. But it just speaks to how, in the bigger picture, while they're going to take the American money, they will do what they have to do to get that foreign dollar as well now.
Mike, let me ask you something. That's a great point you made, an application to the whole scripting of these events. So, for example, if they have a 10-year agreement to hold them at Wembley Stadium, so you got to get your PR team out there to handle a lot of the scripting.
Is that Mike? This is one time where the NFL can't cry, oh, we didn't know, because they've been going to, they've been going with it. It's been at least whether it's exhibition games or regular season games, they've made a foothold, especially over in England, especially in Wembley. Basically, for the last 20 years, they've played at least one game at Wembley. Now it's multiple games. And so there really is no excuse for ignorance is not bliss here, because they know exactly what they've done. And this is something that, they push, they'll have the schedule for the 2017 games before the regular season is over this year.
And why do the and not be over there? They've been doing this for 18 years now. And why
do like can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we hear you fine. We're okay.
Okay.
They've been doing this for 12 to 14 years. And
that's
why
true.
It could be the first time.
That's true. But, Gary, that's a great point. But I also think that what happened in professional sports is that these guys, you know, you can't really tamper with the other owner's property. So the way that that this thing structured is they will have to go back and find some level of renegotiation or find a way, from a PR standpoint, to use the clause internationally so that this goes off without a hitch.
Well, we know that there will be some protests because there are folks who intend to go across the water to deal with this. But Reggie, you're down there in that neck of the woods. Have they actually talked about this aspect of it on talk radio, or is there any kind of buzz coming from this at all?
We got all problems because that's called recently due to the so-called water filter. And they're dumping the water into the James Bassett Creek right now. So we've got all of that Michigan down here.
No, but I'm referring to the game now. I'm referring to Washington going over to London to play in the international series.
These people are so brain-dead down here, brainwashed. I mean, they fight no about changing the names, and they're ready to fight you on that. So, I mean, they can care less about what's going on. They're talking about get tickets and how you can go ahead to your cabin to go to Mariel London and participate in seeing a lifetime in a film overseas.
Hey, this gets worse by the minute. I can see them scoring as I'm hearing the song. Hail to the niggers, slow-minded creeps, dumb motherfuckers, cheering for DC. They may as well be saying that, you know, because isn't that what the majority of implies?
So, see, the thing that I've always, to me, you got a Jewish owner that's being defiant like this. If anybody should be sensitive about blood or anything, you would think a Jewish owner would, but he don't give a damn. And the thing is, when you hear the old argument of, oh well, we'll lose so much money if we change the name and all this other stuff, please, man, in many ways you could just go with, say, like the Washington Warriors. And you still won't lose. You know, you can keep the logo, but you at least don't have the slanderous name. But he's gonna be, you know, he's been defiant and all that stuff, and he plays into the whole thing of, oh, it's about pride and all that other stuff. Come on, this is the second home for this team. This team was the original Boston. Was doing in Boston, and they tried to push that same narrative back then as well.
You know, we got to remember this. You know, Robin, as I say this, Robin, we got to remember. What always made the NFL so effective once they became America's pastime was the fact that it didn't matter how good or how bad the on-field product was, it was always in demand. That demand has got to have shifted somewhat now, given the amount of negative pattern that keeps coming out, not just because Colin Kaepernick took a knee. A lot of people don't like the product. But now this product is going to be spoon-fed to everybody, and they're going to say take it and like it. I don't know about you, but this feels more and more like what James Caan and the directors were envisioning in 1975 when the movie Rollerball came out, that it's turning into some sort of corporate world sport where everything, all the leagues are going to conglomerate together, and nobody would probably mind it if the sport were worth it. But do you actually like the product that the NFL is putting out in this field?
I haven't really been paying attention to the NFL since Barry Sanders retired. And I think I bought the NFL package 1-2 years when to watch the Lions when Cal Johnson was there. And I just couldn't. It's just not the same game for me in terms of how the game is played. There's too many flags. But more importantly, I look at it from the owner's standpoint. For example, the ownership group meetings were in Houston today. And they're down there trying to figure out a way to get Las Vegas in play
or get a new stadium in Oakland. So each one of those owners has its own territory, and they run it like a like an anti-bellum organization. I mean, for example, teams that people are really fighting. It's almost like state rights with these people. So yeah, I really am turned off by the NFL, and you know, I watch the games when they're on Sunday, typically the 4th week of because I know the playoff on and this is baseball. But other than that, I really don't concern myself with what they're doing, other than understanding what they do from a marketing standpoint and also from television.
Exactly. You got the professor, Fred Whitman, in the mix. The professor just wrote a great piece for Black Athlete Sports Network. And, Professor, you've already spoken on your apathy of the National Football League other than when you're stealing your plane. So here we are. The International Series is carrying on. You're feeling the pinch in terms of having to spend the extra energy on deflecting the bad marketing that came out in lieu of the unsuccessful attack on Colin Kaepernick. So now where do you see all this laying, Professor? And good evening, by the way, everybody. Good evening.
We're going to make it a 7-4 time over. Hi, y'all. Well, first and foremost, I haven't even watched the Steelers pass some highlights online this year. Football is, I mean, I get sick and, I mean, I'm from the old school. I mean, I sit and draw plays just to relax a lot. I tell people, you know, as a statistician, I look at the game differently. So, but you know, the one term I'll use that John that I think John Madden probably should have patented was smash mouth football. Mm-hmm. I'm used to a fullback that will come up into the hole and get the short yards. I'm used to a fullback will come up into the hole, clear the way. You know, a 225, 235, 230, 35, even down 45 fullback come in the hole, take on a defensive lineman, nose guard, you know, whoever. And all this manby pamby, don't hit the quarterback, especially the white ones. And all that stuff. Who wants to watch that? And, you know, right now the big deal is about Roethlisberger getting hurt. I mean, you know, I think personally, if it's not his fault, it's not the coaches or the admin's fault that a player gets hurt. But if you're a quarterback, I mean, I think that, you know, 2 hours practice is enough. 2.5 is more than enough. And if in 2.5 hours you can't get a decent amount of reps for your backup quarterback, your system is, I mean, you got a really piss poor system. You know, I look at Eddie Robinson, and you know, you've heard me talk about Big House games. They took a game that everybody else has so complicated. And I've seen some of these playbooks that look like encyclopedias. Ain't that much football in the world. And you can't play with so much in 60 minutes. So what they're putting out on the it's no little wonder that the actual product sucks so bad. It doesn't matter. I mean, realistically, for basketball, give me the CIAA any day. And I'm not talking about Trump. I'm just talking about regular geeks. Give it to me any day because I get sick and tired of all these big men who can't get them out of court. And everybody's talking about how tough they are, how big they are. They are useful. And I know enough about how Coach Mack taught the game to understand why he had a 6'6" center that he won 3 national championships with, while other teams had 6'11", 6'8", 6'11", 6'10", 6'11", 6'9", and he beat them. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Henry Robinson on the football field, and Jake Gaither, and John Mary, and all, you know, and many of the other greats of old.
Yep.
You know, when in doubt, go deep. How complicated is that? You know, we're going to line up, we're going to split you wide, and if you want to cover the hole, cover the hole. We won't be there. We have the speed to be somewhere else. That's the game. That's how the game was played. That's how Florida football was built. All this stuff you see in Florida State and, you know, 1,000-yard, you know, Winston's lead running back has almost at 1,000 yards, although he missed, I think, one or two games. Because they started running the ball, which was our tradition going back to the years when I was there. So, you know, we would line up to run you over. I don't see that. I see guys, you know, catching the ball out of the backfield. Okay. OJ, Jim Brown, Walter, Barry. I heard somebody mention Barry Sanders. You know, come on. These are guys who would, you know, they would try. I mean, they may initially try to juke you. Truth be known, Walter Payton juked you to set you up to run the hell over you. And that's what he usually did. And his guards knew. This guard, I'll take him. You know, you give this first one, I'm going to take him on. And then, you know, from then on, you know, we're just going to go man on man and see who's going to win. It's going to be me. And I think I love that game. This man, Tammy, stuff they got now. I understand the whole thing for concussion protocols and all this stuff, but you know, call the game as a game. Don't call the game because you like somebody, and too much of that has gotten into football and even basketball now, because you know, basketball has become Dipsy Doo Dunkaroo and Dapper Dance, and it truly sucks. I'd rather watch a mid-major game on the new, whatever the new network is. I'd rather watch a mid-major game with no people in the stands, which is baffling to me. I mean, even the home games fans don't seem to show up. But, you know, you watch these games, and you see better playing, better games at some of these mid-major and Division II schools than you do at the Division I's where you got all these, I mean, you know, Okafor was a one-and-done, and, you know, and everybody come up on Michael, what Michael was doing as you know, at the same age that LeBron is. Well, Michael had 3 years of college under a pretty decent coach. You know,
true.
You should have seen Michael about 6 years before his junior year of college. Well, say six or seven years. But he was like a freshman. He sucked. He was long, gangly. And he had a body, he didn't know what to do with it. If I was a coach, I'd have cut him too, because he couldn't play. His cousin was better than he was. So, you know, and everybody has gotten in this whole ESPN mentality about everything, and everything is the greatest play you've ever seen. Come on.
Yep.
It was a new now.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that, because we can speak right off the top of that to somebody who has been in the belly of the mouse. You know, T-Mac, you already know what their game plan is when they put this crap out there. You know, at what point do you think the people who actually work there are, like, literally biting their tongues so they can cash those checks because that formula just doesn't work anymore?
That whole, you know, nothing, you know, they, you know, I always will say this. You know, they began in September of 1979. And in their mind's eyes, nothing happened before then.
Right.
You know, it was, you know, basically sports began with them. And that's how they do it. But also, what's even worse, and to piggyback on what Fred says, everything, you know, it's like everything now is the greatest era. You know, everything has to be compared, you know. When they're talking about quote-unquote old school, they're not even going back to the 70s. They're going back to, like, the early 80s or what have you. And then also, there's the off-the-field aspect that seems to take over more than anything else. It's like, because, see, I've said this before about them, whenever you catch them in a lie or whatever, well, you know, we're more about entertainment than sports. And then when you say, well, what's the entertainment value of this? And then, oh, no, it's more about sports. You didn't want it both. And maybe this makes me somewhat of a sports snob. I still watch the game. There's nothing more annoying to watch a sporting event on ESPN and to see that little annoying thing, oh, or Sports Center on so and so right now. So I'm I'm watching the game. Oh no, I've got to turn the game off and watch Sports Center because they're going to tell me more than what I can do by watching the game.
Well, it should show you all how crazy the world has gotten because of this whole ESPN syndrome. Most HBCUs that were once Division II, NAIA, and all that kind of stuff, if you go through their media guys, the few that still actually produce money, most of them are online now. I was talking to the guy, one of my people was at the Norfolk Central game a couple of weeks ago, or two or three weeks ago, and I said, get me a copy of the media guy. And in conversing back and forth to set it up with the SID, I was informed that Norfolk State, which has a tradition of great media guys going back to the John Holly days, they did not print a media guy this year.
Everything's online now.
Correct. Hampton has not printed one in several years. And, it's cost-cutting, and I understand to a degree, and I download, and I got a whole slew of those things on my flash drive and that sort of thing. But, you know, if you go back and look at their records in a lot of those schools that were once NAIA and Division II, some of them don't even have other than just basic. And I know there was not a lot of information kept back then, but and the other thing too is once a player graduates or finishes eligibility, there's no like end of career. There's not an end of career type profile of them. I have actually written probably a couple hundred of them now. I'll have the information to do another couple hundred because you have to go to the NCAA website to get your final stats because if they're not a major leader, their stuff may not even be there. And some of the overheads, fortunately, it depends on the SID. And I understand. Okay, Max probably about 30. Probably no more than 35. Maurice up at Hampton is probably mid-30s because I've known him since he was a freshman in college, and it's been close to 20 years. Adrian, at the CIAA office now, met him like 3 years before I met Maurice. And, we call that a father and son under Cliff Huff and that kind of thing. But, when you look at the youth of the SIDs across the land, I mean, the guy right here at Fayetteville State, from time to time, he has probably some of the best information from Mr. Crow when I got it. And I tell him, if it's something I know, I'm not going to, it's not a big deal when you have a kill you in on it, but, it's the nature of the beast. The smaller schools don't have the wherewithal to do a lot of stuff. But the sad thing is the bigger schools that do, they have bought into this whole syndrome.
Yeah.
And everything
that's where I'm going.
MC Dude Dunkaroo and I used to love to sit with Coach McClendon because he would go, that's just 2 points. He wouldn't flinch. The funniest thing in the world was that year they had him judging the slam dunk contest. He did it, and he was fair, but he didn't see. A guy takes 4 steps. He can't do that in a game, and that's always been my thing. What's the big deal about a dunk that's from the top of the key? And we ain't talking about the Julius Erving dunk. When he went around on Oscar Robertson. We ain't talking about that one. We're talking about some little 6 foot two, who travels after he picks up the ball. He travels halfway down the court before he jumps, to the lane before he jumps. And, you know, everybody go, you know, and the crowd goes wild. The crowd don't know what the heck they're looking at because all this stuff in a regular game would be illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, and
they're being told to go wild. That's why, Fred, you know, the crowd's dumber too. You know, we give the players shit because, you know, they're one and done and whatnot, but we know they're working under a fucked up system that won't give them any real money they won't pay for the play. I mean, at least on top of the table, underneath it might be a whole separate story, and only a few for that regard. But, you know,
when they take that money, they're made to look like the biggest assholes and criminals in the world. And, who was the bad boy to play with Detroit?
Chris Webber. It was Chris Webber.
No, the white guy. The white guy to play with...
Remember
his comment about why did you go hardship? How the hell can I go hardship? My dad is an investment banker. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But you had Rick Mahorn, his father and his parents were not investment bankers. He said, you know, why did you stay in school 4 years? Well, it was paid for. Well, why'd you go hardship? My dad's an investment banker, you know. And I forget what his mom does, but, you know, and she worked when she wanted to, but, you know, she was broke. And, you know, when you look at the whole facade that is out there called amateur sports, and, you know, we talk about the Tiger Bells and, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, realistically, in today's environment, Wilma Rudolph would have ran probably, again, in 64, again in 68, but she had a child to take care of. And in running track, as an amateur, she and her child could have starved to death.
Mm-hmm.
But we preserved her amateur status. And, you know, it is not like there wasn't money being made. Coaches were making money.
Mm-hmm.
Officials were making money. Everybody was making money but the athletes. Well, he gets a scholarship. Unless you go to Duke, Northwestern, and some of these other schools, that, you know, there's Wake Forest, which is, I think, 40-something a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you go to a state institution that's $10,000 a year in state.
Right.
Okay, realistically, for the hours you put in, now just focus on football and basketball, because you can get around practicing a lot of other sports. But, you know,
right.
In college I wrestled, which meant, in most cases, running in the morning, running at lunchtime,
mm-hmm.
and running in the evening
mm-hmm.
before I did practice. The easy days mm-hmm. were match days unless I, you know, was close on weight. And when you look at the hours I put in, plus going to school and maintaining a 3+, 3.0+ GPA, I'm amazed at the amount of fun I actually had. But I'll just put it this way. I hung around older people most of my life, and I knew what older people did and how they did it, and that's how I did it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hang out I had plans. Don't get me wrong, I had plans, but some of the stuff they did, going to dances and stuff, I ain't have the energy for no dancing. And so, you know, I did what I was going to do. I went one door, out the other one, did what I was going to do, and went back to my room and went to sleep. And, you know, it's not fair to the kids that are put through this stuff. And then, you know, if it was not taking into account with all this, gentlemen, is this.
Mm-hmm.
When we take the time to look at the sports side, the athletic and academic side, and, you know, balance the two, and see the other thing that's not talked about in this is there's some good to great coaches out there
mm-hmm.
in every sport.
but they're just some truly down-to-earth, good-for-nothing assholes who call themselves coaches. You see, we have all probably experienced some of them.
I think
you're legends in their own mind. I'm sorry. These jokers are legends in their own mind, and these are minds that should be wasted. Calipari is one. And then, like I said, there's others out there. Because I like to listen to Old Norwood Central talking about how his coaches, different coaches he had over the years, and how they chewed him out and all this kind of stuff to make him better.
Mm-hmm.
And see, there are those kind who do that. Because,
yep.
He coached Central, and he later coached Delaware State for a while. You know.
Greg Jackson.
Greg would get your grill big time. But you know, Greg was one of those guys. To show what kind of class Greg had. The guy who gave Greg a chance to coach when nobody else would, had some difficulties. Greg hired him on his staff as he's like an operations guy, whatever it was he called him. And it helped him get his life straight. And see, that's the kind of class, you know, would you want your child to pay for him? Yeah. Now, Greg will get you grilled. He will make you feel lower than a nest behind. But at the same time, at the end of the day, he saw that you got better at what you did, how you did it, and as a person, you know. And those are the kind of quality guys that a lot of black guys who don't go to black schools don't miss.
Mm-hmm. There you go. That's a great point. You know, as we segue from that to pro coaches, you know, Robert, we know that there have always been black coaches who never got the chance to show their to really strut their stuff at the highest level. You know, up there by you, Sean Lewis was a Super Bowl assistant coach. But he didn't get any offers like the white guys did. You know, nobody fawned over him like they did Dave Wannstedt and his non-coaching ass. So, of course, Sherman Lewis didn't get credit for the offense because they said, well, Mike Holmgren did that. Now, I'm bringing this up to bring you up to where we may find the first casualty of the 2016 coaching season as Todd Bowles in New York is in deep doo-doo. And a lot of this ain't on Todd because their so-called star quarterback, who, as Richard Pryor would say, the boy ain't shit. He wasn't shit to begin with, and Bowles had to deal with him. Plus the Geno Smith selection and subsequent second-guessing won't make him successful in New York because he's already been given the kiss of death there. What do you do when you're a coach and you're trying to handle your business on the field and you have the distraction of somebody thinking he's better than he really is, coupled with somebody who's better but will never get the shot because the fan base, the media there, and others are working against his behind?
Well, the first thing that's happened, you have to have authority as a coach. I noticed that. I watched the Jets and Steelers game, I think it was week before last, whenever it was. And I watched on the field, and I'm thinking, okay, well, at some point, you got to tell Geno to put down the damn headset and, you know, drop the clipboard, even at halftime, because you're up by 3, but I think they were up 14-13 at the half. And I'm saying, okay, well, you know, Topical Tomlin's got to make some adjustments here, and you're not really moving the football. You got a little bit, I think they got Matt Forte behind, running back.
Point. Right.
He's a good player. But they're also here for the football behind the cat, Fitzpatrick.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, you got to make some adjustments. But during that broadcast, I think it was Phil Simms and Jim Mack. You know, whatever the old white cats out of dude.
Right.
I guess that was NFL on CBS. they took something. Nick Mango, the tackle, got hurt. As they're talking about, well, you know, they're going to need a lot of leadership going out of that huddle, blah, blah, blah. So Simmons mentioned that he and Nick Mangold and Ryan Fitzpatrick are probably the two tightest cats on the team. So when I think stuff like that, I'm thinking, okay, well, this guy has been in the league 11 years, and Phil Kim just kicked the relationship between the tackle and the quarterback, and the tackle and the quarterback always know who's running the show. And if you're saying Nick Mangold is only missed four games in 11 years, well, he's got a lot of sway in that locker room. I already know that from my old high school football. There's a relationship in that locker room. But if Mangold is pressuring, Mangold and or the people that run the front office for the Jets are making decisions behind Mangold's back, then he's irrespective of what the contract comes up, he's walking on the plane. So now at some point, maybe they're saying, well, now we have to make a move because there's pressure and fans are seeing it, and we're not pissing off the season ticket holders who work in construction around New York City, who buy the tickets and buy the merchandise. If we don't piss them off, maybe now is the right time to do it. I don't know if they did, because I didn't watch it this weekend. Or whenever they leave. On the Monday night or whatever night it was. I didn't watch
right.
it. But this, you know, it's not my practice to watch.
But this is why I bring this up, Tony. We know, as we said often here, the sports, when they're on that playing field, that's their job. You know, that's their work location. So they're subject to the same horseshit as everybody else in the corporate world. You know, people forget it. That veneer has been long taken off if you've really been paying attention to what we're saying here. So, Tony, we got to shop like New York, and I'm using it because they are a union. So we got to shop like New York. But management has said, we've paid this mediocre, non-throwing, interception creep motherfucker more money than he's ever made in one motherfucking season, and now he's regressed to the motherfucker we thought he was in the first place before he was stupid enough to sign him to the contract. Meanwhile, in Seattle, Russell Wilson, General Wilson, minimum wage brother, was whipping everybody's ass. And I don't want to hear shit about his running game and all this other shit because during the years that Russell Wilson has been quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks, he has had 16 injuries to his offensive line, including the replacement of two centers. Fred, you've been in the pit. You know how important the center is and the center quarterback exchange. For somebody to be that proficient, if they can make adjustments to one, that's no mean feat. But Russell Wilson, if the front office hadn't gone the way that they did, they'd have told Pete Carroll, look, we spent $10 million on that player, whatever the fuck his name was. We've already made the financial commitment. This motherfucker's got to play. Now, we know a lot of offenses in the NFL play like that because they don't give a shit. They're cutting up the TV money. But here Seattle decides, we got the best man on the field right there in this $500,000 a year motherfucker. We got to play him. And they decide to go that direction, see, because of it. I'm sorry, yes, man.
Well, you know, just for those, you know, anybody listening who doesn't know, the quarterback is the throwing quarterback, but the blocking quarterback is the center. And as my son said when he was about 6 or 7 years old, okay, why the quarterback get credit for the game? Because there's the man that does everything. He was talking about the center because every, you know, except for kickoffs, whether you're receiving or kicking off, just about everything else you do is based on what the center does. Nothing happens until he snaps the ball. And my son recognized that, and he was 6 years old, and he never cared that much about football. But even him, just sitting there watching the game, like, hey, that's the name that does everything. And I think he said it was, I can't remember, it was a field goal or extra point or might have been an extra point because it was something he noticed. It made him notice that, you know, we're talking to quarterback. Like, he ain't doing nothing. He's handing the ball to somebody. Yeah, but that's important, too.
But you know, he recognized that the average, this wasn't the average fan of most sports is, I mean, they started idiots and go down, because when you look at what they truly know about the game, and I don't mean what D. Whitehead talk when he's talking about how knowledgeable Carolina fans are, because they should be going to Idiots Anonymous first in line. Because I've been around them, and they don't know the diddly squat about the game. They don't know the diddly squat about the history of the game. And, you know, you tell them something, you know, again, they are ESPN addicts. So You can't tell them anything that happened, you tell them, you know, back then when Carolina won their first national championship in 1957, half those guys would not have made a team with black players on it at all. Well, he was an All-American. I don't care if he was All-World. Mm-hmm. You know, as I always ask him, if Billy Cunningham and O'Corn and all them other guys were so great, why did they disappear? You know.
There you go.
Well, you know, and they always come back. Well, you know, we had what was that? That no playing 7 foot dude. I think the world of him as a person, but
Montrose.
Montrose. Yeah, with Derek Montrose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Montrose the Albatross. I always lead with this. He was a great young man. What he did for that kid that had cancer, I would never put him down for that. I think the world of him for that. But on the court, Salvadori, he couldn't carry Salvadori's jockstrap. And the only reason he was in the program as far as he did, because he was white, 7 feet tall, and played the Carolina for Dean Smith.
And
he
had USC on his jersey.
That's true. Yeah, I mean,
that's right.
You know, he was just worthless. I'll never get one night some guy who was barely 6 feet tall dunked on him. We're talking about somebody who not from one of the bigger schools. This kid played for some mid major, I guess it was. It was one of them games, and it showed up on TV a couple of times, and then I guess Casper called the station because they wouldn't put it on anymore. But you know, this little dude jumped on that joker.
Actually, Montrose had all the films burned, but I can't prove it.
Well, gentlemen, I have Patrick Farrell on the line as well. And Patrick, I don't know how much you heard, but we came in talking about the tenuous situation that may be there. I didn't say he will be, but may be there with Coach Todd Bowles there at the Jets. You know, we saw how management handles situations with quarterbacks. The instance with the Jets where they paid Fitzpatrick and Fitzpatrick just come up short. And it's Seattle in comparison where they paid Matt Flynn, but they said, take your check and say thank you, Jesus, because Russell Wilson is the better player and he's going to start for us. So that's two schools of thought regarding how the front office handles it. You know, you've been in the front office before. How would you assess, give us your 411 on what you think the Jets are going to do now?
Well, first of all, happy to be with you guys. Good evening.
Always a pleasure.
And good evening, yes. Yes, sir.
Always a pleasure, guys. I'll let the Jet camp be there for a while. That long at once.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like Jill's going to start for this weekend. He has to make that I think it was on point where you said it was a combination of a conglomerate effort to make the change. The GM and coach and for lost people, which really means Woody, which we do.
Yeah.
When you guys those 10 interceptions in two games, come on now. You know, and I'm big on the very fact that I believe I've been at the Jet camp a number of times and seen Geno in practice. Geno can play. I think he needs to be in a different situation. Some people who believe in him. And it matches competitiveness until we get the quarterback. But why with the Jets? I don't think his potential will be reached. But they'll throw him out there this coming Sunday and see what he can do. He'll be lambasted by all the local knuckleheads who believe he can't play. But given the options that they have with Teddy, who has some ability, and I don't know what the other guy has to work for, he got the right name, Hackenberg. A guy who couldn't get out of the way when he was a Big Ten. Obviously, I have to jump back a little bit because he had three different coordinators in 3 different years. He played as the best man for O'Brien. But the guy, I think, is, you know, the guy's limited ability in solo because he has a feet. Yeah, he looked good in uniform, but, you know, that's about it. But in terms of Geno, it's Geno's last chance, last round. I think he's playing from the team. I think the front office will do what they have to do, and they did what they have to do because they can't pay him like $12 million, and you and I can go in and spend a season make a week, and we ain't get nothing. So, I know what's toughest for me is what is the locker room going to do? How much does the locker room have in terms of talking to Todd Bowles? Look, man, we must not have, particularly on defense, we out there with 5 minutes. No wonder we can't stop nobody. I'm not saying what do the leaders say about that. So, like I said, I think with conglomerative decision, let's try something else. And that's not to totally eliminate Fitzpatrick from the year, but maybe sit back and look at what he's doing and go from there. I heard some knuckleheads, and I'm putting that lightly, who should be getting a new coach. What? Shut up. You know?
And then, you know,
I don't know who convinced him to draft that color boy. I mean, that blew me out of the water. Cause
blew everybody out of the water. That's not supposed to happen on America's team, Fred.
No, because a black quarterback, and he hasn't mentioned wide receiver defensive back yet about him. Not that he can play either one. But, you know, it was just like it was, you know, I was listening to some guys from Grambling. They were talking about, back in the day, they were talking about how some team were talking about changing Shaq Harris to a tight end. And they were talking about the cheer.
And you know what? If he could have run, that's exactly what they would have done, too.
It's a good thing he couldn't run. He never played another quarterback. And the real deal was, you know, because this was when they were really getting it, because this was when he was with the, I want to say it was with the Ravens at the time. Because this was when they were doing, you know, everybody lining up in the shotgun. And then they were, Eddie would have never gone to the shotgun with him because he couldn't catch. Something about his eye aim wasn't good. So, you know, fortunately, you know, he literally had to take a direct snap. So, as anything other than quarterback, he was a waste. Fortunately, he was a good quarterback, although they did waste him.
We know that, but see, the Jerry Jones thing bears further introspection because Jones had to look his own self in the eye. I know that's part of heart. He didn't want to kick Prescott. I truly believe that. I don't have proof up to my face to say yes. No, I truly believe he didn't want to take Prescott. But he saw those empty stands in Philadelphia during that Chip Kelly fiasco. He didn't want that happening down in Dallas. Whether we want to admit it or not, one thing he's always been ahead of the curve on, because he picked Frederick, that center from Wisconsin, and he got laughed at that year. And that was his base, and he built a nice line from all that. As a matter of fact, he built a serious line. Gary can roll for 10 yards backwards behind that line. You know, popping wheelies all the way, and nobody would touch him. That's how good that line is. But Jones has to convince
him. With or without the ascot, that's what I want to know. Could he do it with or without the ascot?
There you go. See, Jones, for better or worse, knew that no matter what, he's always done one thing well. He's always convinced his fan base that every year, no matter how convoluted shit he's talking, the Cowboys believe they're going to be in a Super Bowl. You know, now, half the time they know it's not happening during the Romo era. But, you know, you were talking about somebody said to Romo he can't play. I believe Tony Romo told Tony Romo he can't play. Because he's looking at the six of wood. Yes.
Remember, this is the same guy that had that his son had to talk him out of drafting Johnny Manziel. And how,
yes,
Lois.
Thank
how,
you.
And how,
thank
how
you.
Funny was that? How funny was that about Johnny Manziel in the streets of Arlington? But I digress.
But he's already been down the streets of Arlington and Hermosa, Texas.
This is
drunk and on high.
And they had to know, which is why they shouldn't have picked him in the first damn place. And they didn't.
Exactly. But the thing he's doing now is this just goes back to the greedy bastard factor in the NFL. He's selling the brand. His whole thing is because they're the Irving Cowboys. Oh, I'm sorry, the Arlington Cowboys. I'm sorry, let me get the city correct. he can sell them a bill of goods. It's no different than Reverend Ike's prayer cloth. It's the same thing. It's the difference is the prayer cloth has got that blue and white star on it, and because they're the Dallas friggin' Cowboys, people will go for it. But the thing is, you know, Dak and Zeke are their future. If they allow them to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you piggyback to this whole Seattle thing. If they had allowed Matt Flynn to become their starting quarterback, they would not even be half as good as the team as they are now.
Thank you.
But without the running defense, or with or without the running game, and with or without the defense, you know. But the sad thing is,
and Russell Wilson would have been out of the damn league,
because after that three-year contract, they just said he's too much against the cap, black ass, or they either left somewhere else. He'd have been trying out somewhere. Maybe he goes to Canada. I don't know. But that one decision was a definite game changer overall for the National Football League. The National Football League didn't want Seattle to be a stronghold in the NFL.
And it was a black quarterback too.
Exactly.
Thank you. At the end of the day, Dak Prescott is a taller version of Russell Wilson.
Yes, he
right
is.
Right down to the mobility, arm strength,
yep.
and savvy. But the thing is,
yep.
It's a perception problem. It goes back to what we've all been mentioning before. Being a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys is like playing center field for the Yankees. It's like being the captain for the Montreal Canadiens. It's like being center. All of them, blacks need not apply. And that's the thing.
Yep.
That's the thing that bothers them the most. But see, and Rob has talked about this before in regards to sports, politics, and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's about having a quote-unquote good fit. And whether they want to admit to it or not, that guy's a damn good fit. And I know it's his games in and everything like that, but remember, he's coming from a good football pedigree, in the SEC. And again, he's shown poise. And the one thing and these asshole owners still don't get it. You have to have a mobile quarterback in these days. One of the reasons why Brent guy gets beat the hell up all the time is because he's willing to sit back there and take a beating. Roethlisberger doesn't have much longer left in this league because every other year between his motorcycle and his pension to just want to absorb the hit, he's going to be out of the league because he just can't get beat up all the time. Tony Romo is basically where Jim Plunkett was after all those years with New England and San Francisco.
Good point.
Beat up.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they had the offensive lineup, God, he's still going to get knocked out in some instances.
What you said was on point. So let me get an element to it. That it's the elephant in the room that a lot of people don't want to, particularly NFL offensive minded coaches, and even though they don't deal with. And that is, you on point about Dax being a bigger version of Russell Wilson. But the perception is, and remains, is that they don't want. There are too many offensive coordinators who are locked in because they ain't got no freaking balls to understand that they want to play the quarterback the way Johnny Unitas played it. They want to play drop back quarterback, stay in the pocket. They do not want to deal with the fact that a mobile quarterback don't want to deal with the fact that there's a different way to play quarterback. It's the one way they want to stay that way. Offensive building run that way. You got commentators like Phil Simms, like Boomer Esiason, like Gary Danielson, like all these guys.
Troy,
you have to be a mobile quarterback. You got to stay in the pocket. I love your thing, because you couldn't do nothing else but that.
And that model is entrenched in the entire aspect of all these NFL teams, except for those who got one that. I've heard it so many times, a mobile quarterback is number one in the Super Bowl. Wait a minute.
Exactly.
And he's a dumbass call for back-to-back Super Bowl. He's a mobile quarterback. But he doesn't fit that move, that model that he want to use as a quarterback because that's the way it has been.
The
mobile quarterbacks of the last, 10, 15 years, have mostly been sabotaged before they get to the Super Bowl or once they get there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you one prime example. Bill McNair. He was screwed over by his dumbass coach
Thank you. Made him a dropback quarterback for
very dumbass
quarters, and then came back and came within a yard of getting into the end zone and winning it, in spite of what that dumbass head coach had for a game plan. Because I've talked to people who were on the team, on the other team, and they said if he had moved to one side or the other three times in the first quarter, they would have been screwed. They had no remedy for him moving out of the pocket. As long as he stayed in the pocket, they could double down on people and all kinds of stuff and take people out of the, take his receivers out of the game. When he started moving, look at what happened. They got to the 1 yard line. And I'm glad that that same jackass who came up with that, who approved that game plan, because he was not the offensive coordinator, but approved that game plan, then once the game got going, let it place, I'm glad he doesn't have a Super Bowl. Although it would be nice to have had another Ram have a Super Bowl ring, but, you know, he's a good kid without it, so. That's my soapbox.
And what made it worse, Fred, the next time he got another mobile quarterback, Vince Young, he sabotaged him as well, sabotaged him all the way out of the league, even though he had a winning record.
Yeah. And you know, and so we saw the same thing happen in D.C. That jackass did the same kind of thing on Griffin. And, you know, hopefully Griffin will be able to come back. But see, he's with a team that's really not as good as what he had with Washington. But the problem is, we have a major problem in the NFL and some other sports too. You know, coaches get into this is how we do it routine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're God Junior, and this is the only thing that's ever worked. Only thing that's ever going to work. I mean, you've heard me say it before. White folks have control issues, and they have control, and anything that goes outside of their realm of control, they think is wrong. They think it's just jacked up. And the problem is when you take the time to look at it. There are brothers out there who've been doing something. I mean, like I say, you know, we talk about the West Coast offense and how it's flourished under the San Francisco. The true West Coast offense was being played at black schools long before, because they were spread out
long before.
And, you know, in the offense that Tennessee State ran for years, it might as well have been. The spread offense, because all they would do is, I mean, on the snap, the running back went to, when it went to the flat and up.
Mm-hmm.
The snap.
So, Fred, let me take this already in place. Let me go back to this, because what you said about the Super Bowl is most poignant. We got to remember, who gets to call the Super Bowl? These guys aren't going to say the things that need to be said. Because I was at that game and I saw all the stuff that you were talking about. And if they were going to give everybody an honest broadcast of what was going on there, the so-called analysts, am I right or not, Patrick, would have been saying the same things Fred would have said. He said, that shit is there. Why are they calling it? You know, why is he going back to the huddle and let the coach know, I got this? So all of these things don't come into play. And if they call the game the way that Fred described it, Steve McNair would have been lionized as a hero in that NFL video rather than somebody who got lucky and all of a sudden was a yard short. They rubbed in that yard short because they didn't say that his coach was a dumb motherfucker who handcuffed his star quarterback.
Well, you know, for 40 minutes of the game. Mm-hmm.
It's
typical, guys, you know, the control factor.
Mm-hmm.
I want to win the way I want to win, because it typifies how it really is.
I mean,
yes.
Look at the time it took for guys to really understand mobile quarterbacks in college. You know, until some players, again, like I said, they took some offensive coordinators who had some balls and said, no, we're going to win this because this works. You know, it took them like the coach in the Browns got, Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson has thrown himself out of pocket, you know, to use. But, you know, there's not a lot of coaches that Pete Carroll's another one. Pete Carroll's, okay, we can win this. But they're not a lot of coaches that are going to do that because they want to follow that model because you know why?
Yeah, and they don't know any better. Trey, let me make this point real quick. If Mike Vick had not ever been convicted for dogs, still would have been blacklisted by the league because Mike Vick was the first NFL quarterback whose speed was such that they couldn't factor it in. And that drove every coach nuts. They couldn't teach it. Even his own coach couldn't teach it. So he didn't want to hamper Mike Vick, and the opposition did. So we know for a fact this was not bred for to be a speed situation. And Fran Tarkenton, didn't give him his due, was a mobile quarterback who always got screwed at the end because they didn't want him to succeed in that self-same manner. So we know this is something that's long past being a fad. This is tradition. You have to do it their way. And with Roethlisberger and other quarterbacks going down, they're running out of white heroes. You know, you got Brady, you got Breeze. And now who you got coming? These kids, these black kids are kicking everybody's ass. They can't account for them. And now you got Watson coming out of Clemson, too. But watch what they say about him. They'll dog him out just like they dogged out Bridgewater and others before him.
It's already started.
Yes.
Matter of fact, Patrick, I think your guy in Columbus is can be a great pro quarterback, but they're going to put him in a box and they're going to be like, well, he doesn't have this, he doesn't have that. Now he's been running. Basically the spread his whole career, and they're still going to try to tell you, well, you can't play in the NFL. And I'm like,
in Columbus, which one are you talking about? I know one went to wide receiver, but, you know.
I'm talking about JT Barrett.
No, I'm talking about, but, you know, wasn't it about 2 years ago when they won a national championship?
Well, they had three.
Some dude who probably driving by in a car, and they said, well, can you play quarterback? Yeah, come on. And he goes out there, and I think they went undefeated or whatever it was. So, I mean, you know, this is part of what my reasoning when I say the NFL is like the WWE or the WWF, the games are fixed, because too many of these things keep going on over and over and over again for it not to be true. We see the same thing in some of these games that we see, in games that we see on TV that are part of movies. It's the statistician part of me, the historical part of me. I see a pattern over and over and over again. And I start thinking that, okay, when the wheel turns to this point, I'm hearing a bell go ding. There it goes, ding. Okay, right back, ding. There it goes again, ding. And I'm not like Donald Trump. I'm a Republican, but I'm not like Donald Trump. I recognize when I see certain things over and over again, it's real. It keeps happening. Over and over again. I still think Cam Newton walked out of that press conference last year because he was about to spill the beans on the NFL.
I agree.
And so it's not, I mean, and then, you know, the buffoons out front, let me have a good question. The buffoons and the press didn't have sense enough to know that the picks was on. He saw how he acted, you know, he spoke, you know. And, you know, and the tragedy in all this, just like I said, I had to tell this group the other day about what he said, you know, and I was on his case, but I said, well, the other thing I consider there is, realistically, you're talking about a, what, 25, 26-year-old boy who came up in the Deep South in a football environment. He didn't go to regular school. He went to school to play football.
He went to college to play football. All his, I mean, and so many things around him were scripted for him, and so many things around him was protected for him. And so he may not have had, beyond a certain point, exposure to the real world, because we know he probably not only black coaches he ever talked to are from white schools, because he was never allowed to talk to a brother from a brother school. And you see, those guys lived a charmed life. You know, you talk to, I don't know if any of you guys ever interviewed some of these guys over these big schools. You know, first of all, you got to have an ironclad appointment, all kinds of nonsense to get to them. And you know, when you go to, like, you know, it's like Tony, you've been to the CIAA. You see, guy, I mean, you just catch them in the hall and talk to them. You know, there's some stipulation, but you know, if I bring someone, say, oh, yeah, he'll be here in 5 minutes. You know, minutes. Well, who are you? Well, you know, I interviewed Dave Robbins, I interviewed House, all kinds of coaches and players over the years. You know, the only one I ever wanted to slap was Stephen A. because when he first came back to the, when the ESPN started broadcasting the CIAA, he came in because he was a CIAA alum. I've stopped saying he was a CIAA player because I don't think he ever really played. But, you know, with that in mind, you know, he came back and he was not the friendliest person, but a couple of people brought him down to earth. And, you know, he flowed really, really smooth after that. But, you know, you have to understand that this whole scripting thing, whether you can quote unquote verify that there's cheating going on. It's cheating going on. And eventually, you know, let's say you just watch certain things and you start noticing. You know, we watch a quarterbacks. I mean, I was showing this cat this on, we were talking about the motion that Cam Newton used when he throws. Go look at how he threw it in the Super Bowl last year. The motion was different. And this is why balls are going over people's head.
Landing
out of bounds.
Yep. I'm with you, Finn. I used to go to NFL films back in the day when I was prepping for Blitz. And I could actually go in the archives and look at game films and stuff and see what the shit was going on. And you're not the first person to say this. You know, we've talked about Bernie Parrish. He's been on our show talking about this all the time, that the WWE mentality exists in the hierarchy of the National Football League. And we can have black people as secondary stars, but they can't wear the white hat. They're not allowed to wear the white hat. You know, Russell Wilson's ass for another look at Denver Broncos, and that first one, you know, there was no doubt. They took it out of the hands of the refs, so they had no control over that. They lost control, and Seattle made them pay. And more credit to them for that. But nowadays, why would we be surprised if Marshawn Lynch were to say, if I got that ball the 1 yard line, they was going to call a holding penalty, so I wasn't going to take the ball? I would believe it, wouldn't you? Given the kind of play that Russell Wilson called from that huddle, wouldn't you? You don't throw a slant from 1 yard into a pack of players down to the 1 yard line. Throw a fade, run a bootleg, something. You don't go into a power pass. You know, you'd run your coil on them that run first.
Well, the ideal thing would have been to just rule out for real.
Yes.
And you know, I mean, realistically, tight end across the middle, rule out.
Yes.
Everything opens up in the middle.
That's
and
right.
Just, he will, you know, just get over the defensive lineman's head, 10 yards, you got 10 yards to work with.
Oh, God.
Yeah, all I know is I talked to Drew Pearson, and Drew Pearson said that you do not go up the middle. He said that was the craziest thing
you
ever seen.
Thank you. It was bullshit. Patrick, we were just talking about this. Talking about the red zone and how quarterbacks will look down, so he's going to look straight at the tight end coming down the seam. You know, that's always, 99 times out of 100, that first call, they're going up against a 2-deep cover. And single high, you call the fade, send it out there to open the field up. None of that stuff is going on.
but they just don't tell people this, which makes it even worse because they're really ignorant when something does bog down.
That's why fans are called fans.
Yeah, the thing that gets me real quick is that Russell Wilson has to take blame for this. And because he's the quarterback, what are you going to do, bench him? This guy said that he had opted the audible out of it, and he did. Then he comes on the side and says, this haunts him. He goes to bed, he cries at night. Bullshit. I don't want to hear that. You had opportunity, and you nutted
him. I believe him because they would have called the penalty. They would have called the holding penalty.
Well,
he had called his own number and ran it in.
No,
Richie, hear me out on this. Hear me out on this. Because, you got to remember, Russell Wilson was a minimum wage brother, and in 2 years, he beat two of the NFL's icons back to back. They can say all they want about the running game. Russell Wilson outfought those guys. And I believe, just as Fred said about Cam Newton, that a similar action would have happened regarding General Wilson. The fact that he made it back to the playoffs the next year is a tribute to his mental wherewithal to shake all that off and eventually know that I'm going to win more of these things in spite of what these mofos do. But I digress. I'm sorry.
Just one thing. One of the images I'll never forget about that was seeing Marshawn Lynch on the sidelines laughing right after that play.
Thank you. I'm going to.
I'll get that as long as I live.
He had to let me
from seeing his I think it goes back to what Mike said in regards to everybody and their mama thought, put it this way, everybody and their mama thought that there was going to be Lynch getting the ball. If you remember the makeup of that drive, Lynch,
yep.
Lynch had 40 yards on that drive, with the exception of that one crazy pass to Kirkland. But But the thing is, if you remember how that played out, and I defy anybody to find the play by play on that drive. You know, the thing is, that drive was him. And think about this. Think about all those, we all are old enough to remember when they changed the rules in 1980 to make it an offensive game.
Mm-hmm.
Even teams like the Cardinals with Coryell, and then Coryell subsequently with the Chargers, and then even with the Bills and everything like that. Even with all the throwing that they did, even the Chargers had a James Brooks and a Chuck Muncy. Even the Cardinals had a very underrated Terry Metcalf. Even the Bills had a Hall of Fame running back in Thurman Thomas. All of those offenses always had a running back. The thing that bothers me the most about the modern day NFL now is that they have basically turned the running back into a side dish. And for football, as we all know and love it and have followed over the years, it's always been about running. Whether it was the Packers sweep, whether it was the Dolphins, or whether it was the Steelers, or whether it was the Cowboys with either Dorsett or Dwayne Thomas or Calvin Hill. Even the lousy, stinking-ass Giants would have guys like Ron Johnson and Ron Carpenter, you know? And again, we don't even have to mention the all-time greats. We're talking, even guys like Larry Brown, who was very underrated in his day.
Yes, he was.
Even way back in the day with the million-dollar backfield with the 49ers with Joe Perry and John Henry
Johnson. John Henry Johnson.
But the one NFL film thing I remember like yesterday, a feel here and a feel here and we're going to run that out. That's
motherfucking out.
That's Rob Nagurski. That's Red Grange. That's Jim Brown. That's Jim Braxton.
That's right.
They killed me.
That was what I was That was what I was talking about earlier. I mean, all this spread out and thrown here and thrown here. Why would you throw a pass to somebody in the backfield? You know, and hope that the guy can, you know, you don't even, I mean, it's sickening to sit there and watch that stuff. And, and I was one of the coaches in the local team here, and I said, you know, you don't have to worry about me coming to see practice. I know what you're doing. And I've seen enough of it to know, I don't want to see that. You know, it's progressive. I said, progressive my ass. You can't be. It's just like 2 years ago. Penn State had one of the best running backs in the conference. Yeah. You know who held him in check? The offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
He ran this boy. I saw this kid run into a dumping into. I mean, it was a piss poor block.
Mm-hmm.
By the guard and the tackle. These two guys came in on him. He was running straight ahead. I saw number 30 sort of to the shoulders, and they pinched down on him and lit him up good. The next thing you know, he's spinning off of them and gone. And I'm thinking, you're running him across the formation while he's in the pistol.
Well, you need to put that pistol to your head and then pull his money.
You know, this is no reflection on Reggie, but that coach, he played at Reggie's alma mater. He coached at Reggie's alma mater.
Here we go.
And now he is a former coach. I don't know where he is now, but, you know.
Did he used to go to Winston-Salem? No, he coached at Hampton and FAMU before he came here.
He was a former offensive lineman. His line could block me. Nine, 10,
He had 12 offensive linemen. Between attrition and duty, we normally play games with 7 and 8 because, I mean, he just, guys were soldiers. And if they had to go to the field, they were in the field, whatever. But my point is this. We could run the ball. We ran the ball on Shawan back then, which was still a junior college back in those days. And we had like 9 guys that went Division I. And seven or eight of those guys played defense that year. Because one of them was, you know, all something other. And went on to play professionally for several years. We trapped him all night. We told him, hey, every time he moved, no care which side he was on, we automatically, if we were going that way, we automatically trapped him. And half the time we would take the trap just in case we were going away from him, we cut him. And so, you know, this is what you did to take small guys who had weight profiles that they couldn't be, you know, it's like playing Army, because we Army and Navy won, and the Air Force won wishbone.
Uh-huh.
We did the same basic thing. You come in here, your knee is going out, because we don't cut you.
Come take the knee.
Gentlemen, let me do this, because I want to reset to the top here, because there's some great points that have been made, and I want to make sure that we reflect on these things as we carry forth, because the images from this are a bit more pernicious than people seem to perceive of them right off the bat. You know, we know America's team is all this in the minds of the league and how they get pushed a certain way. If Dak Prescott were the quarterback of Houston Texans or even the Houston Oilers back in the day, you know, Tony, no one would make a fuss about it. You know, they finally paid Warren Moon the money he should have got back then, and he proved he was worth it. But in looking at this, knowing how the Dallas Cowboys are now the most expensive franchise in terms of overall worth in all of sports, that's NHL, that's soccer, that's everything. Over $4 billion, the Dallas Cowboys are number one. You know, this is like Trading Places and Jerry Jones and his son are like the Shoot Brothers in the bathroom saying, do you think I would let a nigga run our company? Of course I want them to be doing that. And they got that wild nigga that Cuban cigar, too. And that wild nigga that Cuban cigar.
That's right.
That's
real talk.
It's perception. It's, you know, again, you know, there's a reason why Yankee fans still beat you to death with Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle and everything else. Now I give Roger Staubach his due. Roger Staubach was tremendous. He, you know, he won Super Bowls and everything like that. Yeah, the whole Captain America image thing got to be
the
old time.
He was running the central president for them.
And he had the Navy background, and he had the
Yes, he did.
And see, to me, that's what it should be about. If we can play, it shouldn't matter. But see,
That's right.
Therein lies the problem. Aaron Lives to find you for every Russell, Russell Wilson, there's an Eldridge Dickey. For Warren Moon, there's a Joe Gilliam Jr. And there's been countless players who were never given the same sort of opportunity. And what bothers me the most is that it's 2016 and we're still talking about that.
And the images can't be denied. We cannot say if somehow they gave Woodson credit for that sack in the snow on Tom Brady's ass, that legend would not have been developed by the National Football League to the degree that it has. By rights, Woodson should have won that game. Maybe they go on to the Super Bowl. But let's look at, again, we talked about color schemes and over the Raiders. What do they represent? raping, pillaging, murdering, all that good shit. You know, it's like, does the league really want that? It's a tribute to the talent that they won as many championships as they did.
I mean, Mike, come on, man. You got Spygate. You got my so desperate with me. They had to burn the damn field.
But see, they clean all them. You got to remember, they clean all that up with the waving of the flag. I was there when they came out with that.
Oh, the New England Patriots will come out as one united team.
And they're waving a flag. Remember, this is 9-11, post-9-11, all that shit. Those images really mattered. And this was right out of Central Kansas. They scripted this thing to the bus. That's right. And even my youngest daughter, Debbie, hates sports. She even said, 24 is going to get the ball, right? She's looking at me saying this in the Super Bowl with Marshawn Lynch. So if she didn't notice some shit like that, you know, everybody and their mama thought that Lynch was going to get the damn ball.
Well, Pete Carroll, I hope he got a nice bank account. That's all that's it.
Well, he was a crook in college. He was a crook in college, and he just, you know.
Thank you. and play through, I want to say, 81, 82. Now, when you take the time to look all the way back, that's been, what, 30-plus years? 36 years now? And look at the fact that over 36 years, we've gone from all white centers to about 65-70% of the centers in the NFL now black. We can't literally claim middle linebacker as much now as we did at one point because nobody really plays with one anymore. Inside linebacker and outside, but with the split offense, we go four down, two linebackers and five defensive backs, which sort of basically take away from the middle linebacker. But, you know, we have a guy who played offensive guard who became the first, Willie Lanier. And then you had Harry Carson, who later played middle linebacker, but he was a defensive end in college. So, you know, we can make transition from one position to another and still be the best at it. And, you know, remember they tried to screw Carson out of going into the Hall of Fame. And they voted him in.
Yeah, 10 years. He was getting screwed. Actually, you know, Patrick, you were there covering the Giants and the Jets along with me. What was Harry Carson's mentality near the end of that process, knowing year after year he wasn't getting in?
Well, he wasn't happy, but them was the bricks. That's how it worked. He had some other things going on too, so. But in the back of his mind, he knew he was going to be taken care of. Of course he was. But the younger crew came in with Pepper Johnson and that crew, and Banks and all those guys came in, and LT. So, you know, I didn't want to play with him, too.
Yeah, that's intriguing. Gentlemen, before we get to final thoughts, you know, we started off talking about the fact that there are so many profanities in our face that we don't dare call profanities because they're not laced with 4 or 7 or 12 letter expletives that we tend to pass them off and not think of them as such. But I contend that if there's a million people waiting online to vote in Atlanta, and you know a lot of them are black, and you know a lot of them are elderly, and they're waiting in that hot sun, but they know the more important thing is the vote. How is that not a profanity? How is the idea of a 90-year-old sister, gal, or brother, or big mama having to stand in line for hours because they are deliberately rigging the system to stop them, to discourage them from voting? That's more of a profanity than somebody saying, motherfucker.
It depends on how old they are who's saying it, Mike.
It's no different from the quote unquote literacy test that they tried to do back in the 60s or anything like that. It you know, they've been trying to suppress our vote for years. And all they do now, they just have more quote unquote sophisticated ways of doing it now. And don't even go in the Electoral College to see. I think a lot of us, and I know I am for one, ever since 2000, I think a lot of people are apathetic about it. I mean, when the last I checked was the guy that took the most votes is supposed to win. So if you're going to tell me that the next college is going to vote for is literally going to hold the book, why should I go out there? You know?
There you go.
Now, bad enough, you got two people that I think even lepers wouldn't want to vote for. But even with that being, it's very tough to be enthusiastic about voting for that the system is rigged. And he's saying that has nothing to do with the system has been messed up long before then. For him to cry foul now is asshole, you knew that going into it. So please don't, you know, he's just showing more.
Well, see, that's my point. Look how far he got by being able to do that. But it eventually turned to bite him in the ass because he became a walking profanity based on his actions. And even when it was put up there on Front Street, you still had a collection of ignorant motherfuckers who said they don't care. There was even a meme of one woman who t-shirt on with the arrow pointed down telling Donald Trump that he could go on ahead and pet her you-know-what, even though she probably had that arrow drawn down there because she couldn't find that motherfucker herself. But I digress.
To be honest with you, there was probably five or four mother hands down in there, but I can't prove that.
Well, I have somebody who can prove that as we go Anthony Hamilton for a special
review. Any of you about to see is in no form of fashion degrade any woman. We only repeat what Donald Trump said. We feel like this.
Most of it was plenty. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab him by the pussy.
Oh, don't vote for Donald, he will grab you.
And that we're in 2016, you know, why should I put a mask?
And I want to tell them this. There are black folks in debt now because they tried to vote. All you got to do is get your monkey ass up. Don't do it yourself. Do it for them.
There you go.
And lastly, I'll be the check game spending. You know what Smith is going to start. I'll be the extra early. And I'm ready.
And what? Gino's going to start?
Oh, boy. It's like and, I had problems before at quarterback.
Mega. So I'm going to be the extra early. And I know all week I'll be listening. Not that I want to, but I just to stay informed of all the haters, you know, around here, particularly
right.
on the radio waves, you know, the Francesas
yep.
and all, and the Boomer Sizes and all these other suckers are going to, you know, bash the guy. But I hope he goes up and plays well and does well, because I'm quite sure it was a decision that Todd and the people around him made. Said, okay, we got to try something else. Because, quite frankly, you can't throw tennis in tennis in three games to keep your job. And the world is three ancient. The three ancient African philosophers when they said peace and chicken grease.
Got that shit, man. Patrick Farrar, producer at Jamie Ray Moore. Yes, indeedy. We will be Soul Tree Radio on Raw and Black Athlete Sports Network is proud to be collaborating with Brother Farrar on a show Jet Streams around mid-season where we talk about the fortunes of the Jets. It's fine to stand there by Brother Farrar. And it reminds me of something Ronnie Lott said when he was playing with the Jets. He said, you find out about a team and where they're going between weeks 6 and 10. Because people who got hurt early on get healthy. People who fall to the wayside, other guys pick them up. You know, so by the 10th week, you have a firm idea where your team's head at. And I had a chance to speak to him direct on that. Ronnie Lott was a great interview, and he was always honest. And you always, and a lot of these reporters don't have that. There's times when, you know, the game is just finished. Leave them the fuck alone, and at least let them go shower and go and talk and whatnot. And I was blessed that a lot of cats understood that aspect. I wasn't going there to suck up anybody. Not to say that my way is any better than anybody else's, but it's like, if you don't understand football to begin with, you ain't got no business in the fucking locker room anyway asking those damn questions. But I digress.
Thank you.
Now, having said that, Brother Robert.
Yes,
sir.
The best question sometimes is no question at all.
Thank you. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, having said that, we turn it over to Brother Robert Qualls, CEO of Marquee Magazine, working in conjunction with the Assassins of BASN. Robert, take on the show. Any final thoughts you have? Anything you want to go through the pot, sir?
Yeah, I think that, again, it all goes back to where you are in the organization, how much authority you have, decisions about what happens, what. And I want to thank you both for fighting for the collaboration.
Thank you.
Our key feature, I'm Not Perfect, which kind of gives you a clue as to what direction I'm not going to go. We'll follow that up in November, which is the November of Marquee, when we'll have the Eve of Destruction will be the channel. Check me out at TaylorMade Media and or on Twitter at TaylorNYC, and you'll find out what we got going.
Sounds good. Thank you as always, Robert, Professor. As always, you can find some great nuggets for us here. I'm with you 1,000%. I want to see real football. I'm tired of this poom poom ball. You know we ain't going to see it again in this lifetime anyway, but be gracious and give us something else for the pot and a shameless plug, if you will.
Well, first, thanks, Reggie, and all of you guys for your prayers and support. We're drying out slowly but surely on here. And we had 24 plus inches of rain in some areas within 8 days. And so when Matt came through, we were already loaded with water.
We had 9 inches and 15 hours of winds before. But, you know, we're like, we're clearing out the kids in my neighborhood, thank God, went back to school Monday. And the kids a little further south and east of us, we're not sure when they're going back. They're talking about next month, and all kinds of stuff. I start working the poles tomorrow, so I guess I'll be running into some of those nice Trump people. And then
don't hit them.
Well, they're actually going to profile me because they know that I'm black, so I got to be a Democrat. Or got a second independent, and I'll tell them, I'm, you know, sometimes you have to remember, I've been a Republican longer than you have. You can't be, but yes, I am. But anyway, you know, we're still moving forward with the HBC Heritage Center. I got to figure out a time that I can actually sit down and write a piece for the next 2 weeks for View from the Shadow, because I'm a little behind. I might have to recycle something wink. But anyway, we're getting our books together and everything. We've about worked out all the legal stuff, and I got to actually have help now. So that's a blessing in itself. Keep up with what we're doing. You can put some Black History on your Christmas tree. Go to www.blackheritagereview.com. Put some Black History under your Christmas tree. Help us build a museum and a library to house information in the history of HBCUs. Because if we don't do it, nobody will. If we don't do it now,
Amen.
The people who truly know won't be here anymore.
It is.
Reggie's not getting any younger.
Got that right.
And neither am I.
It was too damn hot in that gym tonight.
I say.
Well, I'm going to pass out.
Well, throw something in the pot for us and a shameless plug, if you will.
I also want to take the time out to thank Robert and Fred for their contributions to BASM. You know, great stuff, guys. Keep doing what you're doing.
I appreciate what you're able to do.
Gary, don't hit me, but the Cleveland Indians have gone to the World Series.
Oh, no.
Way to go, Gary. Them letters didn't work.
It's your fault.
Don't worry, Gary. I got
you back. The Cubs, though, I'm in shock.
Well, put it this way.
You know the folks at Fox are sitting at home praying that the series is at least going to be 2-2 before the night is over.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, incredible meltdown. It's going to be at least 2-2 at the end of the night. The Cubs are up 10-2 now, seventh inning. But that being said, am I going to really know now? It's bad enough we have to put up with Joe Buck for Ohio.
Oh, God.
Well,
God.
But you know, I used to think that the Red Sox fans were the most whiningest franchise of all time. Then they finally won a few World Series, and they still whining, didn't seem as bad. But if we get Cleveland and Chicago, you talk about just whining franchise, just whining fan bases. It's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it goes to an eighth game and they both lose, because it's going to
be
that lesson. Just the whining aspect alone. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping. I'm hoping the Dodgers can come through with this. They had a little trouble tonight, but I want to see the Dodgers get in, if nothing else, so we don't have two of the most whining fan bases. People can be a bigger, more whining than Keith Sweat. That's the sad thing.
Oh, that's when both teams lose.
I hope it goes eight so they can do something.
We'll be that way.
But it's,
yeah,
absolutely
we got plans to take out Cleveland because we're going to put industrial strength X on the line.
Yeah.
We ain't going to be there to work it. No,
we may have to. We may have to translate the
Yeah, really. Even with all the things said, though, even this stuff, you gotta get, and the thing about it is, they're gonna have, they got till Tuesday to rest, so they can set up their, they can set up their bullpen and everything else. So
front line.
Oh well. Yeah. Oh well.
No question about that. So stay tuned, as my brother Robert likes to say. We're going to see what happens, but that motherfucker ain't winning that World Series. I'm sorry. But I digress. Because I know if you're watching the game and you hear about somebody rolling up on the field and doing a Nancy Kerrigan on the start pitcher and mother going, wow! You know who the fumes behind the wheel is, shit.
Mike, this just in. Donald Trump told another lie.
Another one. All right, Chief.
Yep. Old pumpkin
head. It was good. Some clothes and thoughts and shit. And I know you clean your gun and whatnot, so make sure you put it down. So don't get it.
Yeah, put that R50 down there, G.
We have been strong advocates of the fact that there is a long-standing plot to try to legitimize having sexual relations with children. He's talked about this on my show many times and also on Gary's show. And all the things that were going on in between, from a white guy screwing a baby and bragging about it as the judge let him go, to other assorted incidents around this, to Penn State lionizing Joe Paterno and celebrating his life in spite of the fact that the scandal still hadn't gone away, that we know Paterno knew what the fuck was going on there because he had control, as Fred likes to say. White folks love fucking control. He had to know, but they wouldn't even let it rest long enough in their arrogance to make sure that he came back and that the NCAA put those games back so that Coach Rob would be denied the distinction of having more wins than any other college coach in history, as my man said in the Long and Short. So the bigger issue here is not so much that I was off the air on my own show that you didn't know about. And because you didn't know about it, out of sight, out of mind. Well, how would you feel knowing that three policemen over the last weekend were arrested for sexual situation, as in abuse of their power, and we know they had made reaches for them to be caught and prosecuted, knowing what some policemen are getting away with nowadays. All of this stuff is under the table. Somewhere, Walter Cronkite, Huntley and Brinkley, Eric Severide, I mean, all of these motherfuckers are turning over in their graves because they know there is no journalism, and that it's sterilization, and this smacks of 1984. Big Brother's not only watching, he's fucking with you. He's telling you, look at this while I do that. You know, oh, don't waste any time with trying to understand the fact that we've been going after the Voting Rights Act for the past 5 years. Go find Pikachu. He's in Central Park, you stupid motherfuckers. And this is that, unfortunately, a society that doesn't read as much as it used to, you know, will face, because they won't have the time to accept stuff. The short attention spans will be even shorter because they'll just pass it off as, oh, we already know what it is, so I'm not going to. Well, I'll remember that when I see family swinging from a rope, as has been in my family's pedigree. You never forget. And hopefully, because we know the election will be close, not because of politics, but because the ignorant motherfuckers in this country who showed their true colors after the filter was removed and President Obama's re-election. Give that some thought and let that marinate before we come back at you Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern, with another edition of The Tree and some more good food for thought. From my esteemed colleagues, Patrick Ferrar, Robert Quarles, my man Gary G., Cowboy Reggie, the professor, Fred, with it. Tony Matt, everybody, keep those safe. Once you get from A to B and back to A, okay? We'll get something to eat, y'all. Ain't get nothing here. Well,
you know, we're dealing with a very critical and crucial time. Most crucial and critical time that I've ever witnessed, being as young as I am, you know. We all don't want to say nothing else, but we stay as young as we are. Now I want to talk about the pronunciation and the realization. Now,